Hi, I'm Paul Listick, and welcome to Behind the Curtain. Hi, everybody, and welcome to Paul Listick, Behind the Curtain. Of course, you watch me on WGN-TV covering politics, but here on the podcast, we get to go into other worlds. And, you know, I was watching our morning show one morning when I watched an interview with the author of this wonderful book called Highly Irregular, Why Tough Through and Dough Don't Rhyme and Other Oddities of the English Language, Erica Okrent. And I said, I've got to talk to her. And on TV, you get 4 minutes if you're lucky, but we get a little more time to talk about what is a great book that all of you are going to want to check out. So Erica Okrent, the author of Highly Irregular, welcome to the podcast, and I thank you for being with me.
Thank you for having me. This is great.
So I read the entire book. I mean, it's almost hard not to, because every page is just another oddity of our language, and it's words and phrases we use all the time. So I guess I just want to start by asking you, you say sort of in the beginning part of the book that you're not writing about the weirdness of English language. You say this is just standard English, and you kind of raise the question, who are we supposed to blame for all the crazy rules we have? So let's just start with creating a framework for our discussion.
Yeah, when I told people I'm writing about all the weird things about English, they would say, oh, yeah, like, why don't people get there, and there right? Or why do they spell this wrong? Why do they say this wrong? And I would say, no, it's not that. It's the weird things about proper English, the English we're all supposed to be learning and spelling and speaking. It's very weird. Why isn't of spelled with a V? That would make sense, right? Why is kernel spelled like that? Why do we have irregular verbs? Why do we have all these strange phrasing that we don't really notice these things as English speakers, as native speakers? We go along and we're speaking it. We don't really notice it, but then your kid will ask you a question like, "Hey, why isn't it 1 teen and 2 teen instead of 11 and 12?" Or someone who speaks a different language who's trying to learn English will ask you, you know, why can you say why? Let's go over the report, but you can't say, or you can say, let's look over the report, but you can say, let's look it over, but you can't say, let's go it over. Like those should all be parallel. They should all work the same way, but they don't. And this book is sort of the answer to the why of that. We don't just have to shrug in English.
And I want to walk through some of the examples you have and some others that just I struck up. But I have to tell people, even though we might do some several things here, there's no way I'm covering even a pinch of all the examples you give in the book, because every page is just a new phrase, a new something, and every page an adventure. You do say that part of the change is it's a product of evolution, that even when we notice inconsistencies in our language, you say, well, language changes, but it kind of stays the same.
Yeah, there's a tension between those two things. We know language changes. We don't speak the same English of 1,000 years ago. We aren't even able to understand that old English. But it's the people didn't stop speaking at any point in time of those 1,000 years. They kept on speaking it. New generations spoke it, and it grew and it changed, and grammar changed. It's always changing, and we're going generation to generation with those changes, but they're also staying the same because we have to learn it from generation to generation. It can't change too much. So some things are changing while other things are being conserved, and that causes these illogical inconsistencies and weird things in English.
Early on in the book, you refer to the fact that Y is sometimes vowel, that famous phrase, A-E-I-O-U, and sometimes Y. And later in the book, you say the exception proves the rule. And I kind of think maybe those two things might go together. But why is it that Y is sometimes a vowel and sometimes not?
Well, when we say vowel, we are often unclear what we're talking about. So a vowel is a speech sound, but it's also a written symbol, and we don't usually make a distinction between those things, but they're very different. So a Y, that symbol that we use, can be used for a vowel sound or a consonant sound. So it's not, the Y itself isn't a consonant or a vowel as a symbol, but we don't really worry about it for other symbols that work that way. So, you know, we have, you know, the word one is spelled O-N-E, and we would never say, oh, the word one starts with a consonant, actually, but it does. The W in one is a consonant, but we write it with what we know as a vowel. But the Y thing becomes a big deal because it's a lot more, it's in a lot more words as, you know, it's in words like gym and in the middle of words where we expect a vowel and we actually say it as a vowel, but usually Y is in the word gear or the word your, where it's a consonant. So we need to make a little separate section for it in the little song about vowels.
And what do you do? You know, I remember sort of the language of Leave It to Beaver, which should be a model for your book, because, you know, back during that time and even today, kids might say, if you said, what did you eat for dinner? We say, I ate chicken. Mm-hmm. But you sort of raised the question, well, why don't we, since we're supposed to add an ED on the end of a word, why didn't we eat a chicken? Why didn't we drink a glass of pop? And I'm sure, remember, Beaver used to kind of talk that way, and it was like funny that he would misuse language in that way. But really, he was just using things that kind of made sense. It's logical. If I'm eating chicken, then what I did before was I eated it.
Yeah, kids, little kids make these kind of mistakes all the time, and it doesn't mean they don't know what they're doing. It means they know much better what they're doing. They've seen this logical system, and they've puzzled it out, and they've realized there's a order to it, and they're applying a rule that they've observed in speech. And why shouldn't they? You know, but we have to stop and say, oh, no, no, actually, in that case, we don't say drinked and we don't say eated. We have these words, you know, these irregular past tense. And that's one of the situations where it's a holdover from our old, old habits in the language, where language is changing, things are moving, rules are shifting. But the words that we say very, very frequently tend to be the most irregular because we say them so frequently that they become entrenched in their old habits, even as everything's changing around them. So those irregular verbs are holdouts while the world changed around them, and we still use them.
You call my attention to things that I hadn't even thought about. Something you refer to as noun-verb pairs. And an example you give in the book, you'll say, it's just how we pronounce the very same word. Don't insult me with that insult, or I'm going to record a record. You just think about how important the context is, and Americans have to be brilliant if they can actually figure out how to say words in a sentence.
Yeah, that's a really hard thing for foreign, for people who speak other languages trying to read out English. Where do you put the stress? And it can shift in the same word depending on how you're using that word. Is it a noun or is it a verb? And that makes it very tricky for someone who's not immersed in the language all the time to know what to do with the text in front of them. But it's really, you know, it's all of these things have to do with the history of the language and various influences that have changed it. And that one about the word stress is a big one from the French infusion into English. For the people generally know, there was a Norman conquest. The French came in, took over in England. Their language really changed it. We borrowed all this vocabulary, but it also caused other things to happen, like the way we do stress in some situations. So English is really, in its oldest form, is a stress first syllable language. So all the really old words, water, daughter, mother, liver, like these are first syllable stress we like in our nouns. But the French words came in and gave us words like, you know, montagne and jardin. And at first we shifted them. We said mountain and garden. We pulled them over. But after a time, we did start to get some second syllable stress words. And then we say balloon and anything that's really modern French word, like garage or ballet, you know, we put on the second syllable. So it even shifts back and forth within these categories now. But
that's funny. I start to notice everything. You just said water, daughter, and yet, so what pops up in my head? How come water isn't W-A-U when daughter is D-A-U? I mean, water should be water. And maybe it is when you go to the East Coast. Is that, do some parts of the country sort of, you know, make an adjustment to sometimes pronounce something maybe the way it looks?
Yeah, spelling has a huge influence on pronunciation after a point, because people are very literate now in the beginning of the printing press and how do we spell this language. Most people were illiterate for most of the history of English. People have mostly been illiterate. But now reading is really part of your language knowledge too, in a way that it wasn't a couple hundred years ago. And the reading part of it influences how we say things. Like there's no L in the word salmon. That was something we stuck in during this 17th century trend for trying to make words that originated in Latin a little more Latin-y looking. We never had an L in salmon. We borrowed it as saumon from French, but then we stuck it in a spelling. But people will insist now, yeah, I say the L in salmon.
Can I tell you, you've actually just picked something that was on my list to ask you, because it's part of a list of letters in words that have no purpose. And you talk about not, the K in that word of the word not, the P in receipt, mm-hmm. the H in Y, the B in comb has always bugged me. But you had salmon listed too. And I have to say, I'm one of those that actually sometimes do sneak, maybe because I speak some French, but I do sneak the L in there. I feel like, no, it doesn't have to be silent.
Yeah, well, someone told me that in Florida, it's definitely salmon with an L, and I don't know, maybe it is, but I don't know if that's actually a regional difference, but we certainly do begin pronouncing certain letters that were never pronounced originally, but got stuck in the spelling, and then later come to be part of the speech as well, because we are such a literate society now.
So are the reason that letters like B in the word comb, do they not go away just historically? Or is it that because if you take it away, I mean, now you have different ways to say the word, or maybe you put an E on the end, now the word is actually, you know, come. I mean, what how do you explain the when or not, the K in not, as opposed to the not without the K? They're both real words. They just have different meanings. Is there a rule for keeping this stuff straight in your head?
Well, if it stays, it stays through the entrenchment of a habit. So if I decide to write without putting any of those silent letters in and I write, you will be able to read what I've done and figure it out, but it will take you a lot of mental work to figure out what I'm doing there, because you're used to seeing it this way, and you know the word. When we read, we don't sound it out letter by letter. We recognize it and we say it. And so when you see comb, you know it's comb. When you see not, or you know that it's that not, and those letters, either they were there at one point in the life of the language and then we just stopped pronouncing them, or they were stuck in later. But ever since we've had a fully literate society, these things have grown in their entrenchment and they will stay. It's very hard to change spelling, and people react very badly to it when you try to do more phonetic spelling. It looks weird.
Are there some words where it's okay to spell them either way? And what I'm thinking of is color, and you talk about this in the book, color and color, C-O-L-O-R and C-O-L-O-U-R. There's actually one that I don't think I saw in the book, but it's always been an issue for me. So I thought, if it's in the book, I missed it, please tell me. But otherwise, it's theater and theater, ending T-E-R and T-R-E. Although, and I always, whenever I'm giving a website, I do a lot of theater interviews on the podcast, and when I get to say T-R-E, I often say, and you're spelling it the proper British way. But somebody once said to me, actually, it's not that. It was something about one of them is a building and one of them is the act of doing it. So, yeah. So your comment to the notion of, is it okay to spell words either way, like color? And what's your thought about theater?
Well, yeah, theater, center, you have the R-E or the E-R. That was a decision that that was made, I think, Daniel Webster's dictionary, that we're going to do the ER version in America. And that then to the British became sort of, American, like, we don't do it that way. And that further entrenched the habit of doing it the RE version there, just to make it not the American way. Whereas before, it was a little back, in, like, they would spell color without the U in Britain, and they would, you know, it would go back and forth. But once it became known as the American way of doing it, then it was sort of a choice to say, no, we do it this way. But I'd never heard before that that's to be two different meanings of theater and theater, but that makes a lot of sense. People do that all the time when they see a difference in spelling, they want a difference in meaning, and then you use it to sort of show your knowledge. And a big one with this is whiskey. So we've got the whiskey with the E-Y or with no E. So, and like, I always forget how it goes, but like, if it's Japanese or Canadian, then it's just W-H-I-S-K-Y. But I don't know, and I'm not going to say, because people will react very much like, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. Of course it's E-Y or Y. There's a difference there, and people will latch onto it as a, oh, this is why it's a difference. And then the importance of the difference becomes that much more important, and you have to know it, or you've outed yourself as not knowing what you're talking about.
Well, I have to say, with the theater thing, every American where I use that phrase in giving a website, and I say, oh, TRE, the proper British phrase, no American has ever said anything except they've chuckled with me. It was one British guy who said, well, let me explain the difference here for you. So I said, aha, they're owning this. Another thing you write about, and I try to think of, again, the book is filled with this. We're not even touching the surface for all that you do, but I want people to sort of get the fun of what you get to read. You talk about, you know, the notion of things being plural, and why goose. It's not gooses, it's geese, moose. It's not mooses, it's meese. And then, of course, you have what you call the zero plurals, like sheep. How many sheep you got? One. How many you got? 20. You both have sheep? We both have sheep. One, 20. How do you explain the whole plural problem?
Yeah, well, some of those, like the goose, geese, is a, you know, that's a very old way of marking the plural. But we also had these old way of marking, of not marking the plural at all, like sheep and sheep. But moose was, that's a very new animal for us. They didn't have those when English was, you know, forming in the old days. That's a new world animal. And people came to and saw this big creature that kind of looks like a deer, and they chose to call it like a deer. The deer is one deer, two deer, one moose, two moose. And this goes for a lot of the animals that are hunted. So moose and deer and other hunted animals, and even animals that usually have a plural, but when they're hunted, they don't. So you might say, you know, I saw three squirrels on my roof, but then you'd say, I know, I'm out hunting squirrel.
Oh, that's right. So yeah. Do other countries have this
animal? You get the plain one.
Did English come after, you know, some of the, like, French and English, or I should say the British version of English that we use? Did we come later, which is why everything's messed up? Or if I were to study clearly language in England or language, you know, in France, would I see they have the same issues of their own?
Well, yeah, every language has its little infelicities and bumpy bits, and every language has irregularities. But English is a special case, especially with regard to its spelling, because no other language that uses the Latin alphabet, as we do, has this much inconsistency in their spelling. French is pretty bad. There's a lot to know about silent letters and endings you don't pronounce, but you can put it all on two pages. Like, here's all the rules, learn the rules, and you can learn those rules and be able to competently read out the French. You can't do that with English. You need 400 pages of rules saying how each combination of letters, how each vowel is read out. And that has a lot to do with the particular history of language, but also with the timing of the printing press. We had bad timing on English with the development of the printing press, and the and the growth in literacy. So, you know, it happened in the middle of this massive change to the English vowel system. It happened while we were relearning how to use English in formal domains, because that stopped for 300 years when the French came in. We never stopped speaking English, but we didn't use it for, you know, official things like court cases and legal documents while the French were in ruling. But then it was coming back when the printing press was starting, and then all these decisions that are usually made by tradition and scribes who pass the traditions on had totally been disrupted. And we had to figure it all out while the printing press was coming in, and they just wanted to sell books, and they're printing them off, however, right, spelled however, and which spellings got entrenched, which spellings did people get used to seeing. That was all, nothing was coordinated, nothing was happening with any sort of plan to it. It just happened, and now this is what we have, and it's passed on and only gets stronger.
Yeah, well, this is such fascinating. We didn't even get to why the E sound can be spelled differently in piece, peak, piece, receipt, or why crew, grew, new, and so are all spelled with a DW. There's just so much, and that's what I wanted our listeners to understand, that they really need to check out the book Highly Irregular by Erica Okrent. And Erica, you have a website too. Can you give us that so people can check you out?
Yeah, it's just at ericaokrent.com, although my name is spelled very weirdly. Maybe this is why I got on.
Yeah, maybe that's it.
But, it's A-R-I-K-A, Erica, and then Okrent is O-K-R-E-N-T. So neither one of my names is very clear on how you pronounce it or how you spell it. So at ericaokrent.com, I've got a bunch of my writing on languages and some videos I've done. I should mention the book is illustrated by Sean O'Neill, another Chicago person, and he's made great little cartoons to help you through the difficult bits. And we started by making these videos together on YouTube explaining little language things in 2 or 3 minutes. And it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah. And Sean, I know, is known for, you know, graphic novels and his work there. It's a great book, great graphics, every page a new message. And people, when they read the description of our podcast, they'll see the proper spelling of your name as well to check you out. Linguist and author of this book and also of The Land of Invented Languages. Erica, thank you so much. This is great fun. I loved every moment of this book because I love language. I love thinking about it. And you just address it all. And now it drives me crazy, and now I worry about every word I say.
Well, you don't have to do that. We can say language is weird, but it's not just weird. It's weird for reasons, and we can actually know what they are.
I love it. Erica Okrent, the book is Highly Irregular, Why Tough, Through, and Dough Just Don't Rhyme. Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it so much, and I hope everybody checks out the book. Well, if you want to know more about what we've talked about here, follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Paul Lisnek. That's P-A-U-L-L-I-S-N-E-K. And I'd love to hear your comments or topic suggestions for future podcasts. You can also go to my website, paullisnek.tv. And hey, don't forget to hit subscribe on WGN Plus and iTunes. And tune in each week to hear more insider scoop coming to you from behind the curtain.